right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another great edition of Ulwazi with none other than the man himself, that is Mr. Francisco Nishila, joining us here for another edition. Mr. Francisco, how are you doing today?
No, it's a beautiful Saturday. Beautiful. Good to be back in the capital city, dealing with school holidays and all that. But yeah, it's good to be back. And we're just starting off with some new perspective for our listeners on Eagle FM. And yeah, we're good.
And today we're discussing how to become a small-scale property developer here on Ulwazi. As always, if you missed any previous edition of Ulwazi, you can always head to the Eagle FM website or download the mobile application. Go to the podcast section, type in Ulwazi, and you'll be able to re-listen to all our previous great episodes, take in any other information that you may have missed or you may want to re-listen to. So yes, and if you're tuning in to our streams online, send us a question, send us a comment, and if we have time, Nishila will answer it for us. And as always, the number in the studio is 083-288-401. So today, as we said, small scale property developer. Maybe we can start with the definition of a property developer. What is a property developer?
Yeah, a property developer is it can be on an individual perspective. It can be on a business perspective, and it can be on a public perspective. Now, on an individual perspective, maybe you are employed and you just do a development journey, which many other people do. But usually on an individual perspective, the maximum you find people that are investing in property, that would sit around between three to four properties per se, but more or less between three could be the max on average. Where as an entrepreneur, basically you are flipping properties, you buy properties on auction, you do developments, but basically for short term you sell, and that's purely how you then build up a longevity in terms of your development portfolio. Mm-hmm. And then from the public sector is basically where you start buying shares on the stock exchange on companies that are investing, like your Oryx properties and which is not something that we have on the Namibian Stock Exchange. So it's something that still needs to be developed, especially your real estate investment trust. Yeah. I was just looking at the Zimbabwean numbers now. They have thus far, they got four real estate investment companies that have been listed in since 2022. And with a capital investment of round about $100 million US dollars. Mm-hmm. So, which is quite an extensive, I think it works around close to over 2 billion or so. And we still need to start our own journey.
Yeah. So, the overall industry of property development, can we contextualize how big that industry is in Namibia in particular?
Yeah, I think maybe before we go there, it is purely just to what I want to do is to give a perspective as to how do you become a property developer. Okay, because if we unpack that space, we might lose the basic essence. But it's a good question, but we'll get back to that. Now, Namibia is probably one of the blessed countries, especially when you want to start your property development journey or start buying properties.
Okay.
Yeah, the reason saying so is that you don't need any money, yeah, to start you to become a developer. Mm-hmm. Now, what you need to do is purely to look into a specific where your town area within your town area. You then look for open land, because Namibia have a very transparent attitude in terms of property ownership. Mm-hmm. Any property in Namibia, if you want to know who owns that property, you go to the deeds office, you give in your the details of that particular property, and you can access it. Or you can then go to the local authority and you ask for a zoning certificate or whatsoever. It's there's transparency in our property ownership in Namibia. Mm-hmm. And that's purely the most wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Now, if you see an open land that has been vacant for many years in your area and you see that there is potential to develop, you simply just get the data of that particular property. You draft a simple A4 letter and you forward it to the CEO so that you can express your interest as in terms of what you want to do in that property. The local authority will then respond back to you to say that whether or no this development is supported or not. Alternatively, you can also consult your zoning scheme. You can consult your urban structure plan. It will then guide you as to what is the leadership or the town is thinking to develop in that area where you have identified that piece of property.
Yeah.
Now, if the land parcel is available,
mm-hmm.
the local authority will then respond to you with certain conditions that you need to fulfill. And when you now get those conditions,
yeah.
so they will tell you that, no, you need to subdivide the land at your own cost. They will give you the price of the land parcel mm-hmm. and all that. So what you then need to do.
Is this stuff you can now negotiate, or is just they say do this, you have to do that?
No, you can't really negotiate because mm-hmm. obviously they have an eagle view on okay. the development of the town and the area.
Okay.
And there's other development that are around it that perhaps you are not aware of.
Okay.
So obviously they will then also just give you some conditions in the letter
okay.
that is favorable to you, and they'll mm-hmm. give you a specific timeline as to when do you expect to make a deposit and all that.
Yeah.
Now, once you get that letter, they mm-hmm. give you all the conditions that you then need to fulfill. Yeah. So sometimes, as I said, that you don't need any money. Now, once you have that letter, you can either then approach the development bank, the DBN.
Mm-hmm.
DBN can then obviously look into you, and also DBN can tell you that, okay, for us to give you funding,
mm-hmm.
you need to do this for us so that you can see whether the project is viable.
Okay.
Now what DBN equally has, they got a project preparatory fee that they can allocate to you. So they will then say, if they see that there is potential in the development, they can allocate to you a certain amount of money okay. for you to basically to do a feasibility study mm-hmm. of the development.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get that project preparatory fee, you then say, okay, what are the consultants that I need in terms of expertise for me to unlock this? And then you go to those particular consultants and you tell them, guys, I have this current budget to do a feasibility study.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring them on the table and say, this is what we then can do.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you then do such, you then get the feasibility study. And then you should never forget to consult Ulwazi to get your property development data
exactly.
so that you are able, because now you're, and then you develop a feasibility study. Mm-hmm. Now, the content in the feasibility study is what now makes it very critical for the project to then become successful.
Okay.
So you need to look at market value. So market value, obviously you need a valuer to give you perspective. You need an architect to draw up your plans. You need the engineers, your civil, electrical, mechanical engineers, your geotechnical engineers, your environmental impact assessments, should the nature of your development requires you to do an environmental impact assessment. So you now have all these professionals.
Yeah.
So you now need to put together a financial model. Now take note that your quantity surveyor can basically do the cost estimate of your development, but not necessarily they can do your financial model. Your financial model is now something else. Obviously, it also got its requirements, how you're going to sell it, your profits, and all that. Now, most of the time, when people do financial model, because there is a huge hype in the public sector where people just think that there is a demand for housing. There's a demand for development. So obviously you're going to get funding. You're going to get X, Y, and Z. So, and we then forget to do a proper research. So you would then do the financial model, and then you just put an estimate to say, no, after completion, we will get and we will sell out the properties. Now, on average, when you look at the data, especially from Ulwazi, is that on average the sales per year that you could get is round about, the highest you could get is round about 1,000 to 1,600. Now, you now need to make an assessment on the nature of your development, what you are doing. If you are going to sell, so obviously you are in a wider market. If you are going for rental, I think you just need to look at the affordability aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you are in the wider market, so you also need to understand who are the other competitors that are also developing something of nature of similar. Of, let me say you are doing now residential property or say sectional titles, townhouses or whatsoever. You now need to make an assessment now as to how do you get see who's developing. Now there's a wonderful information to do development analysis, which is your government gazette. Because whatever intention you intend to do on that parcel of land, you need to rezone it. Now you just put in, you go to the government gazette, which is online, you put in that particular ERF number,
mm-hmm.
or certain in that town, and you then assess who is doing what, and it gives you an indication in terms of competitive analysis.
Okay.
Or you can go to your local authority, you say, guys, who else is developing in this space and when did they got into the market? And then you can assess where you are in the market.
Yeah.
Now, you've done all those basic analysis. You have an understanding of what is what. And so basically you then put up a team. You have a team of professionals. You have done your research and all those things. But obviously this process takes a bit of time. It mm-hmm. could easily, for you obtaining the positive answer to actually getting to site, it will cost you, say, around about, say, 3 years, because it's a back and forth negotiation, redesigning,
okay.
looking at the financial models and all that. And then obviously now, for those 3 years, the initial research that you have done per year, so every other 6 months, you need to update your data to make sure that it's still competitive and all that, because you mm-hmm. do not want to, on the final time, you did your data on the first year, and year number three, mm-hmm. you get funding and you find yourself short in terms of calculations and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So now all these kind of steps, you need to talk to your team, keep them informed on what is really happening. And also in the process, you go see asset managers, go to different banks. You need to promote the project and you need to build interest in the process.
Mm-hmm.
You do preliminary marketing of the idea and to assess need, and you see how many people then call you and all that. Now, in doing so, you then basically just covered the basic principles of the process. And then you get allocated money, then there's the pre-bidding in terms of the contractor who's going to build,
mm-hmm.
at what cost and how you're going to mitigate the cost. But what most people do, especially when people get the money, they become their own developers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you mismanage the project, the construction project,
mm-hmm.
the risk is on you, which is something which is a lot of people are doing, which they are not supposed to do. You know, get a project team, get people responsible to manage the team, and have someone that is managing the risk on your behalf. So if something really happened, there is people to be blamed as to why do we have a cost overrun. So that is very critical.
So is the reason people aren't doing this, is it costly, or why are people choosing to take the risk on themselves?
Yeah, You know, to be a property developer is one of our very high risk entrepreneurs. It's a blur line between being a successful property developer and a failure. Mm-hmm. Now there is a traditional curse within the property development space. For me saying so is that on average, our property developers, they start off very well. Within starting from year number 5 towards 10, they get off the cliff. And then there's a cycle of new property developers that are coming up. Now, I always have this opinion to say between a drug lord and a property developer, I would probably say it's the same thing. Yeah.
Expand on that.
Yeah, because, you know, a drug lord, once you start getting money cheap, you always wanted it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's the same thing as being a property developer entrepreneur. Once you get into the game, in the thick of things, you just want to develop because your cash flow, you talk big numbers, and that's the space where you want, and it can consume you. Now, if you want to test my theory, you need to look at our criminal justice system in terms of cases. If you've been selling drugs and you get caught and you get out, it's more likely that you'll tend to go back.
Mm-hmm.
Or you will have people that can help you to do the process and you operate in the background. Now, with property development, on the other hand, once you go bust, it becomes also now very difficult to come back. Yeah. So, and we are now on air. I do not want to give specific on certain property developers that were there, but look in your area, especially Swakopmund, Windhoek, Wharfish Bay, or Shakati, or Ngwediva, people that were into property development, and whether they still have longevity in that space, and where they are now. So, and this type of activity or this type of entrepreneurs, they are there. Go talk to them, ask them what was their failures, what was their challenges. You know, sometimes it can be policy issue. You need to have good relationship with local authorities for you to be able to negotiate, for you to give you a bit of time. If your constructions is not done properly, it will affect your compliance certificate from the local authority. This all have delays, and every delay in the property industry, it's on your profit, because your financier would want to collect their money. The financier first collect their money and you get paid last. Whether there's something left for you in the kitty, that is, that's something else. So it becomes now very important as to how you structure your development project. And for you now to undergo this journey, and this is where I'm appealing to those people that are having learning institutions to start developing a program as to how to become a property developer. Myself, I did develop a program of such nature, but I also want that people out there should see this opportunity we need to have those programs.
Mm-hmm.
So that we are able to address the housing backlogs and the rental challenges. But we need to train, this high risk entrepreneurs. Now, a lot of people have studied property studies, but it does not necessarily mean that you have that strength ability to go into property development.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to do a lot of training. I see that the University of Cape Town got a very good online program that you can do property investments. So you just understand the basic processes,
yeah,
as to how to prepare a project. And when other professionals are talking to you, you have an understanding in terms of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would then always suggest that allocate yourself for 20,000 rand, where you do different programs online,
yeah,
and so that you just have a greater understanding. before you really go into this space. You know, there's this thing that in business that you must just do it and you learn as it goes. Yes, mm-hmm. there's a price to pay into that space, you know. 100%. So you need to structure your deal properly to say, okay, guys, when you borrow me the money, can the interest starts at the completion of you want patient capital. Can the interest then starts kick in once construction has been completed?
Yeah.
Or you can negotiate a fixed interest during the construction period. So these are the key things, because it makes a huge difference towards the end when you are going to sell the property.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, as I said, now, where are the opportunities where you can become a small scale property developer? Now, let's quickly look into, for instance, I would really want to start in Wharfish Bay. Now, in Wharfish Bay, when you look at the development policy of Wharfish Bay, they now make provision for you to do 4 or 3 units if there is open space on your property in that you have in Wharfish Bay.
Okay.
Where you don't need to go through having all those professionals and all that. You just get the local authority, you do that application for consent, and you are able then to build your 3 units. And that basically then can become a passive income. Mm-hmm. And as you are learning, you can then start, now that you have a bigger income, you can then start buying land, and you can take the development as it goes. So that is a low-hanging fruit, especially if you are based in Wharfish Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Wharfish Bay is one of the towns that is not requesting for betterment fees when you do property development, because they want to attract investment to their town. It's possibly one of the best major towns that you can buy land and development is quite easy to develop.
What is a betterment fee?
Now, betterment fee is, for instance, you have an open land that is registered and that is undetermined, and you want to put up sectional titles on that land, mm-hmm. meaning you are increasing your development rights on the land. So that means you need to pay betterment fee. Now, and that betterment fee depends on the local authority, is the appreciation of value. So you paid, I think some local authorities, they ask 20% in the appreciation of value. So, but what is that 20%? Let me say the land value, the current land value is 1 million. When you do the rezoning, it then becomes 1.6 million.
Yep.
Now, the 600,000, that is your appreciation value. And then you pay 20% or depending on the local authorities, you pay a certain portion of 20% of that appreciation in value to activate those development rights.
Okay.
Now, the reason I'm saying Wharfish Bay, it offers that opportunity at no cost. Very little professional fees that you're going to spend. So perhaps that will be the best place at the moment to be able to know that you will have a market, your capital cost is not as high. Now you then come to Swakopmund. Swakopmund will then require you to pay a betterment fee. Now let me say you are building 6 units in Wharfish Bay, and you are building 6 units in Swakopmund. That means that you're already, because of the betterment fee, you are already 20% in terms of cost overboard in terms of development. Mm-hmm. So this is the understanding that you need to have. You need to look at what is the development cost in the different towns. Sometimes in the town where you are, especially if you are in Windhoek, and you are in the lower segment of earning, I think it's best that you don't do development in Windhoek. Go do development somewhere else where you are able to have a better leverage on in terms of investment and for you to be able to access capital.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you have that knowledge, now remember, we are still educating how to become a small scale developer. So meaning now we are talking about development policies of the local authority. What are the local authorities are able to provide? You need to understand their zoning scheme, their structure plan. So all this policy, development policy in that local authority, you must have a good understanding to that. Or because you will start your investment journey and halfway down the line, you realize that you are unable to move ahead because you haven't foreseen the requirement for that particular policy. Now, we spoke about Wolfish Bay. We spoke about Swakopmund. Now, let's move towards Usakos and Karibab and Omaruru. Now, when you look at the development or where mining companies are raising capital for operational capital, and basically there is currently now there is construction happening in the mining, meaning that they got mining licenses, not exploration license, but they got a mining license, meaning that they move past feasibility. Mm-hmm. So basically they are looking for development funding. Okay. Or they are those areas. Now, Karibab, Usakos, and Omaruru, those are the areas currently now, especially if you want to start your development journey, those are the three towns you need to target desperately, that you need to move like in yesterday, draft a letter to those local authorities, ask them for viability of land and execute to the best of your abilities. Those of you in those areas, if you have land or if you don't have land, get land. Currently now, land is very cheap. It's affordable. Now, for those of you who live in Usakos might not be affordable because of the income, because Usakos is in a lower income bracket.
Mm-hmm.
But for someone working in Windhoek that you are unable to buy any land, you are a good competitor in Karibab, Usakos, and Omaruru. So, and that is the areas that you then need to target. You need to go there. Especially when you go on holiday and you are passing through those towns, you know, do a sleepover, do an assessment, look at the data, look at the open land, make some notes, use your Google Map on your smartphone, mark out those lands so that by the time that you back and you have enough time and you do your research properly.
Are we mentioning these three towns in particular because of, are we anticipating economic activity there, or why exactly these three towns?
Yes, well, it's economic activity. Now, one other indicator, if there is economic activity in that particular area, you can always see the expansion of the informal settlement. I'm not trying to advocate for informal settlement, mm-hmm. but your informal settlement is also an indicator that there is economic opportunity in the area or in that town. As the informal settlement starts to grow, and it's growing at a rapid pace, so that gives you an indication. Now, let's take, for instance, Karibab.
Okay.
Previously, the visibility of informal settlements, when you drive on the main road passing through Karibab, you are unable to identify them. But if you go there now, on your way to Swakopmund or coming towards Windhoek or wherever, you can see that there is an encroachment and the informal settlement is moving towards the railway. What is actually just stopping them is that railway is actually, it's a buffer, it's a controlling buffer. But once people start jumping over the railway, we will see that the informal settlement is going to encroach towards the main road. Now, the other town that you also need to look at of that typical encroachment to the main road is also Tsumeb, that Kuvukiland area.
Yep.
So in your way to the north, you will see that now the informal settlement literally, basically, you cannot drive on a high speed because there is a crossover pollination of people moving, going to get some firewood and so forth. So I'm not saying that you need to look at informal settlements, but It's an indicator.
But now, still, what's causing this growth in these areas? Is it just general population growth, or are they there for something in particular?
Basically, your mining houses, when they hire laborers, basically meaning your development phase for any mine is mostly laborers. Now, what we mean by laborers is that you need guys to push trolleys, shovels, the guys to put in pipes and all. That is very much low skills. So that is the first phase of bulk recruitment with them when the mine starts. So you don't need, artisan skills or semi-high skills you just need the low laborers. And those low laborers, so they have an understanding, and because those recruitments, you hardly see them in newspapers where a mine says we are looking for people who are willing to assist of the mine with no skill. Mm-hmm. Because if you do such an advert in the local newspapers, you will be flooded with up to 200,000, 300,000 application. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a cumbersome to process those applications. So what these mining houses then do, they recruit contractors. So they recruit contractors, and then these contractors then recruit those laborers. So, and these laborers usually, and those laborers, for them to, because you are earning now 3,500, so you won't be able to afford formal rent. So your next response is to see where you can set up your, if there is an informal settlement areas where you can go through, or you start renting into that space. And also the people that are having bigger yards in an informal settlement areas, they also start playing entrepreneurial ideas by building additional shacks, because they can sense now there is recruitment in the area and so forth. Now, but when you look in Usakos, for instance, the informal settlement area in Usakos is purely non-existent, but you can see in Karibib, because Karibib already, by its nature, it got small-scale miners as well that are doing the tourmaline, the stone harvesting as well. But you also find them in Usakos as well, but they are more prominent in Karibib. Now, this towns, when you look at their development policies, it's very accommodative, yeah? But land is also very much limited in Karibib because of the private farms surrounding it. And this basically, it's a common problem in Namibia. Like your likes, for instance, Otavi, Tsumeb, Karibib, they all have this issues, even on Maruru, they all have these problems because they are kind of built in the center around commercial farms. Mm-hmm. And for you to acquire a portion of the commercial farm, it's a cumbersome. Then you look at Hobabas, for instance, where they are also surrounded by commercial farms as well. And yet again, even Hobabas, where they are getting their water from, is basically from a commercial farm in close proximity of one of their boreholes. So there is this complexity around the area. But if you move quick into that space, you know, what is the guy from Amazon?
Bezos?
Yeah, Bezos, he always have a statement to say you must anticipate the wave. Mm-hmm. You cannot come and jump onto the wave. It becomes a bit more difficult, yeah? So you must anticipate the wave. And it's the same thing in rugby. You must anticipate the scrum, because if you don't anticipate it, once it gets that momentum, it's very difficult to stop it. And it's the same thing that applies into property development.
So what we're saying is we're anticipating increased mining activity in these three towns, which is why you should invest there as a property developer.
No, we are not even anticipating.
Oh, it's happening already.
It's happening.
Yeah.
So, and the quicker, we now need to move quickly before the mine reach maturity. Maturity then means now it's production base. Mm-hmm. Because now it's more in the development stage. Now it's production base. So once it becomes production base, then they're gonna bring in those those artisans from the vocational training centers, mm-hmm. those highly skilled HR and engineers.
Yeah.
And those are the guys now that are going to, that I need, that I need of property.
Mm-hmm.
But whoever is having land in Caribou, you are sitting on gold. And now, mind you, Caribou currently now, there's a railway project, the Kranz, mm-hmm. Between Usakos, Caribou, that whole railway line is being upgraded for $4 billion. And obviously there's a lot of, and that project takes, I think it's already underway.
Mm-hmm.
The roadworks, between Usakos and Caribou, that is also equally there. So now all those type of projects brings laborers and people want to work on the railway and on and all that.
Yes.
So there are those informal settlement aspects then. That's why you will see there is a demand for rental spaces, either from the informal settlement area up to your middle class and the higher end. Mm-hmm. So that need is there, and you'll see some mining companies now. Basically, I know of a particular NGO company now that is building some, doing some developments for a mining company there.
Mm-hmm.
So to build houses for the miners, so that, because they are struggling in that space. Now, so there's a lot of development opportunities, and the land is affordable.
Yeah.
So those are the good places where you can then look into. Now, the tricky places to be a small scale developer will then be Oshakati and Ongwediva, because now government is also working on the road networks in those areas.
Okay.
So as the road network is improving, so people are now saying, look, I have now a Janjapan, which I bought for $100,000.
Yeah.
I'm 5 kilometers out of town. There's a lot of movement. If my car breaks down or is in service, I can still hitchhike.
Mm-hmm.
So why pay the rate and taxes?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the biggest problem in Namibia, we have a problem of, we hardly control the urban edge. And that is, you will always see when you go to Google Earth in those particular town, you will see at the urban edge of any particular town, there's always development taking place. Now, I'm not advocating for people to develop at the urban edge outside the boundaries. But again, hey man, this is Namibia. If an opportunity arises, let's do so. Because once that urge then get expanded, so that means you then become part of the townland, and then also you have a bigger portion of land, and you then basically paying the land from less what its real market value.
Mm-hmm.
So on the basis what you then have developed. So on that basis, you just need then to be smart, get yourself professionals to assist you, so that you don't pay, then you tell the local authority, I will pay for my own town planning and all that.
Yeah.
So that the land cost doesn't get imposed on you. So, but I'm not advocating for that, because it creates a bit of chaos. But I think Namibia needs to start looking into the urban edge development policy. So how do you control that urban edge? A lot of towns don't have it. The likes of Swakopmund and Wolfish Bay, they are not struggling with this because the desert is harsh, and they are equally protected because surrounding the Swakopmund town boundaries, you have the conservancy areas, and automatically that also give you a protection already for people not to develop at the urban edge.
What about Windhoek? Where's Windhoek's urban edge?
Yeah, the Windhoek urban edge, you just slightly off Groot Oop, that is where your urban edge is, and that is you can see already there is opportunities happening in that, but more very much of that an industrial scale.
Mm-hmm.
But then you look at mixed also then forms at your edge. But you see now, just after Mix, there's a road reserve there.
Yeah.
There's a private farm. So that private farm also then serves as a buffer. But the moment there was a gap and a no man's land gap in that space, it would have been a problem. But then you look at what is happening at Dordabes as well. Dordabes, it's a kind of a vague space there. Mm-hmm. There's a huge space where the San community is residing, and that area is currently growing, and the regional council is responsible for that. It's like a no man's land. It's an island between commercial farms and the town boundaries for the city of Windhoek. Mm-hmm. So it's purely a no man's land. But then again, let's come back to the small scale developer and how you can then unpack it. Yeah. We said Omaruru is creating that opportunity now. We say Karibab and we say Usakos. You need to develop in those spaces, get some land in that space and make sure that you form part of that development space. Now coming back at your high stake development, which is your city of Windhoek. Now, city of Windhoek, we need to break it down so that you completely understand. I would then say, let's say that you have a property that is situated in Windhoek West. Yeah. Let me say you have a property in Windhoek West, and this property says is 1,600 or 1,200. You now want to do a development in that space. You then need to do an application to the city of Windhoek because it's in a policy area. Once you get your approval, you then pay your betterment fees, which is at the cost of around about 180,000. You have to pay for your town planner, which is around about, it can cost you anything between 35,000 to 52,000 inclusive of all the cost. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, you have sink, and by the time you get an architect and an engineer, you have already dropped $500,000 into the without laying any brick. Mm. So now you can see now the difference between Windhoek and Wolfish Bay.
Yeah.
So already in Wolfish Bay, you're already sitting on you are on a positive note of 100,000 already. Mm-hmm. Now, mind you, this money is preparation and money. You hardly get it at DBN. So these are things that you need to get out of your pocket. So it becomes it's very important to understand this. Development is quite expensive in the city, but then again, your returns. Yeah, you got good returns. But obviously then capitals comes with a cost as well.
Exactly.
So you have to borrow more to be able now. When now the other aspect that you need to look at, now you will see that in the north, when you are building a 3-bedroom house, you can build it on labor. You could easily spend anything, say 100,000 on labor. While when you are building it in Windhoek, a 3-bedroom house, same size, same square meters, same material, it could easily cost you on a labor of between 100,000 to 200,000 in terms of labor.
Mm-hmm.
So it all depends now where, because obviously labor in Windhoek is also expensive.
Yeah.
So again, as a small scale developer, you need to understand what is really the cost of labor. Become at the end of the day, it also becomes the a necessary aspect whether to determine whether you're gonna get out any profit margins. Now your profit margins for any development in the small scale aspects, you are then looking at between 20% to 30% based on your input cost.
Okay.
of the development. So that is where basically your profit margins are. Now, so you need now to understand is that now property then becomes a volume game. The money is in the volumes. But if you do 100 houses and you do 2 houses, you know, it's the same thing. It's just that the volume, the scale differ. Now, and that's the difference where I say that the difference between a drug dealer and a property developer, there's a gray line. It's just that one is illegal and the other one is a legal approach. Because when you deal with construction, it's a legal process. You need to buy the land, you need to buy the material, and obviously where the capital is coming from is being traced. So And that is the understanding that you need to have. But it's a beautiful space. It's a high stake. When you into property development, you form part of the high stake entrepreneurs. So basically, it's a typical Russian roulette approach that you are doing into development.
Yeah.
But the Ulwazi program is here. We're here to give you perspective so that you understand this. So we are busy. We will be taking you through a journey of what entails to be a property developer. Currently now, our key focus is onto the small scale developers. Now, Let's come back to the individual property developer. I hope I have answered your question on what is happening to the developers when I'm saying the what is the lifespan of a property developer within Namibian context. Now let's quickly get into what people can do. I know there's been huge talks of using your pension to get a portion of your pension so that you can go and invest it somewhere else and all that. Now, your pension is a typical investment. It's basically the time you spend on your job, you are investing your money to look after you at a later stage.
Yeah.
Now, if you've been working at a particular company for, say, 20 years or 25 years, and you still got another 15 years to work, I think you are in a good space to start your property journey. So you now need to identify land on the basis on what you can afford. So you first start, okay, if I extract, say, 5, 10% of my money from my pension fund, so I'm getting an X amount. Now you then look at, okay, this is what I can get, and this is the type of land I can buy. Then you then look at that amount. You then identify a particular town where there is a bit of a high yield or where there is potential to develop, and then you purchase that land. Now, once you purchase that land, so that means that already that land becomes a collateral. So even if you go back, if you go to DBN, there's an aspect where DBN says that we need an owner's contribution of 20%, of which your ownership contribution is then becomes your land. So, and then they are able to borrow your money because you also then have a collateral into that space. And then you can then start off your property development journey. So there are different entry levels where you can enter. So for those people that are also employed and you are able then to utilize your pension and you are able then to get into this development. And now alternatively, you can rezone your particular property. You increase your development right. You use your pension then to develop within the house if there's any space. And obviously you then have a passive income and you use your value for your property then basically then rise after you finish building. So there are different elements as to how you look at it. I do understand that people want to go build their rural houses, but I think it's very important that we need to develop within urban spaces so that you have a greater liquidity and you also can create passive income. That is basically now on a small scale perspective.
So when we talk about small scale development, is there a number we can attach to that to say under an investment of, I don't know, 300,000, anything below that is small and above that is large or medium and then large?
Yeah, for me, small scale development, I'm looking at people that are developing two houses at a time, one houses at a time.
Okay.
Now, especially the Osona concept. The Osona concept, it allows you to buy five houses. Mm-hmm. So at the time, and then you then build and you sell off those property. Once you're done, you get an additional five houses.
Okay.
So that is a typical small scale developer. Now, doing five houses, you are at a mature space. Yeah. So, but you can also start with one property where you build and flip, or you buy a dilapidated houses and you flip it and you move on, flip and build. Mm-hmm. Especially when you are in the employment space, when you are employed and you have a fixed job. So it's very good. Rather you do the flip. You buy houses that are dilapidated. You flip it. In that space.
Mm-hmm.
Now doing such, it then allows you to operate in a small scale developer space. So you are not large, you are just there in the medium space and all that.
Yeah.
So equally so, I say even up to 20 houses, you are literally a small scale developer.
Okay.
But obviously when you then start doing 20 houses, you will then do it as a medium as medium to large, small scale developer, because you can't manage 20 houses and you are full time employed. It becomes a very difficult, project to manage. Mm-hmm. So, and I haven't seen it, but if there's anyone out there, you can give us a call and then basically share your ideas with us. Mm-hmm. So, and if you have any comments, please drop it on our Facebook page. We will be able to respond to you and continue the conversation. Now, there's a lot of opportunities in that space for you to be a small-scale developer. So basically, what we are doing here, we are just giving a 101 lesson as to how can you become a developer.
Yeah.
Now, there is no barrier that says you cannot apply for land in Namibia. If that is one thing which the leadership have done, the Namibian government mm-hmm. has done, is to give fair opportunities to everyone to be able to apply for land. Now, sometimes it's because we have no idea that we can do it, but anyone can do it. Please, if you need a letter, we got a template. We can email it to you. Give us those details. We can email it to you for free, and you can submit it to any CEO for that particular land parcel that you have identified, and we can assist you for free. Anyone?
So yeah. What I'm hearing about property development, really, the only barrier to entry is capital.
Yes, the only barrier is capital, but mm-hmm. Capital is also responsive to innovative ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. Capital is responsive. I haven't seen anyone developing houses in Rocky Crest and there's no opportunity. So it's important that there's capital is available. It's just that your idea needs to be viable.
We have a question here from Doc Shipanga online. He said, can you shed light on the student accommodation, property development, land application, and the profitability prospects? So I guess he wants to know about student accommodation.
Okay. Yeah, we are currently being commissioned to do I've done a research study for student accommodation.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, student accommodation, it's a very complex aspect because none of the local authorities have a particular land use for student accommodation. Mm. Now, student accommodation falls under general residential.
Okay.
Now, what is general residential? Let's say you have a property that is 1,000 square meters,
mm-hmm.
and your density for that 1,000 square meter is 1:100. So you have 100 square meter of a unit that you can develop, that forms, meaning that you can develop 10 units. Now, in 100 square meters, you can then build, say, 10 rooms or 15 rooms in the 100 square meters.
Okay.
Again, do you see? Yeah. So then those 10 rooms, it then becomes your student accommodation. Now, if you're going to do 10 rooms for 100 units, so that means that you can then do, say, 1,000 rooms on a 1,000 square meter. But please, don't quote me wrong there. This is just mathematical,
yeah.
But it is not viable. It's just for understanding purposes.
Yeah.
So you, in essence, you design the block as a unit, like a flat, for instance, but in that flat, you arrange it different rooms.
Yep.
Yeah. Now, the golden rule for student accommodation and what is viable, and I said, we are here to share information. You need 6 square meters. You need to calculate 6 square meters per student for viability. But the moment you exceed this number, mm-hmm. it becomes expensive. Now, what you need to remember for student accommodation, your profit margins for the first 5 years, it's very good. But after that, you need to start looking into how are you going to manage your maintenance, because your utility cost is very high because you have a lot of students. There is odd times. Some students are not going to class, so your water is running all the time, the toilet mm-hmm. are flushing, the electricity and all that. So the making money for student accommodation is your utility cost. Now, if you're buying an existing student accommodation, make sure you are not buying a maintenance plan. That's very important. If you don't understand this, because once it's been running over 5 years, so the numbers are, the profits, I can show you that this is its income, but its capex becomes, the capex and the operational cost becomes different.
Is that because after 5 years, everything needs like to be fixed again, or
yeah, your maintenance is high, so it's very important that you need to have that understanding. Mm-hmm. But in essence, that we don't have a particular land use for student accommodation, but it's basically any student accommodation that you see that is formally built is built under general residential.
Okay,
built in the principle of a sectional title or so. Okay. So that is basically, but we do have extensive research on student accommodation on that. That is also another good space as a small scale developer where you want to get in, if you want to move, especially if you are employed and if your property is located. But there is also one caution that I need to bring forth is that when you look at student accommodation, it's also important to look at what has been happening in the UK, especially on the migrant issues.
Mm-hmm.
So, back in the day, education was the key, and there was a lot of student accommodation development. But now these student accommodation developments have become dormant, and most of this owner then give over these properties to the state. And basically the state is leasing them, and most of the migrants are then housed there and all that. So as much as it can look like a good investment now, I think it's very important to have a long-term trajectory, because you must remember academics is also changing. There is online online education that is also coming forth, and obviously parents wants to start saving money where you can work during the day and in the evening you can do. For instance, if you want to do law at UNAM now, it's purely online. After 5, classes are online.
Yep. And there's no reason to stay on campus.
There's no reason. You can have a low entry job and maybe pay for it and stay at home, but you are then for good access to internet. So there's a lot of changes, and it's important that you need to look at this from a very broad perspective. But yeah, that is probably what I could share for, for now.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Very interesting, and it's a conversation we can expand further, because I still have lots of questions, but we are running out of time. So this is definitely a conversation we can have again and dissect in on several different layers. Yeah. But as we wrap up here, is there any maybe parting words you want to leave with the listeners in terms of property development? Maybe you can also touch on, I know you said earlier that it's important to educate yourself also. So maybe you can re-emphasize on that one, because I asked, is capital the only barrier? But I think maybe we should add also education is a barrier.
Yeah. Yeah. It's purely about information.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to have access to information for you to unpack this journey. So that you shouldn't even, if you have self-driven into this space and you can teach yourself. I think YouTube is another school of thought, you know, that we need to start applying. So back in the days, we used to say that, school of hard knock is on the streets.
Yeah.
But now this generation, there's a lot of AI, there's a lot of YouTube videos that you can listen to see how people have developed their journey. And Ulwazi is here. That's what we're doing. What we're doing, we're educating. So I mean, tune into Ulwazi. We're educating you for free, and to make sure that the nation is well informed in terms of what is happening. As I said, we will run this series on development, 3 or 4 series, so that we can just unpack and so that people can just understand they must tune in on Monday. We are able to extend to it, and also then beyond towards the next coming Saturday.
100%. As Mr. Nashila said, tune in on Monday again. That will be from 4 to 5 p.m. And as always, if you missed an episode or missed a particular stuff that you want to hear again, head to the website. That's www.eaglefm.com.na or download the mobile application. This has been another great edition of Uwaze, and we will see you on Monday.